Welcome to another episode of the Deeper the Dough podcast. I'm super excited to get to know Wendy White on this episode. Wendy, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Wendy, can we start out with just a few minutes of a background of who you are, both professionally and personally?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to share. So currently, I'm the CEO for an organization called Face It Together. We do one-on-one peer coaching for drug and alcohol addiction for those with addiction, but we also have special programming for loved ones. We have offices in Sioux Falls and Colorado Springs. And so leading up to me moving into the CEO role or even just working for Face It Together, I worked in healthcare. My last position in healthcare was an executive director managing all of the clinical applications in the IT department for that organization. Love being part of organizations that are out to help people and help people be well. certainly a lot of pieces go into that to make that happen. And personally, I have four kids ranging in age from 11 to 17. So teenagers are not for the faint of heart, but it's all great and fun. And thank you for having me here.
Yeah, I'm excited. Let's start with the teenagers. You're being a CEO is hard, and having four teenagers is hard. How do you, balance that? What are the pros and cons, and any advice that you have somebody else in your situation?
Yeah, well, I know that you often hear the terms work-life balance, and I don't think it's balance. I think it's integration. I use that term a lot when it comes to that, because as an employer, I try to create a culture that is flexible, knowing that everybody has outside lives, right? We want to be the best version of ourselves, no matter where we're at, whether we're at home or whether we're at work. And so, I try to be as flexible as possible. And I think that's important. And if that means for an individual, maybe they need to want to take lunch so that they can see a parent or see their family or whatever that might be. Being flexible with how that works. So yes, with teenagers, I have three teenagers and an 11-year-old. So I think it's been, and even before they were teenagers, making the transition from the organization I worked for previously to Face It Together that did have a much better culture when it comes to having that flexibility and balance. And so when I first transitioned to Face It Together, this was even pre-pandemic. So this would have been in the end of 2018. I was working kind of hybrid, half-time work from home, half-time in the office. And my daughter, who's now 17, so she would have been 12 at the time. She was like, it's like having a stay-at-home mom, but you're still working. So the fact that I could still be there at the end of the day when she got home, they understood boundaries. If I was on a meeting, they couldn't come in the office, those types of things. But just being able to be available made a huge difference, I think, in my kids. I know not everybody has that luxury. But I do think as employers, the more that we can provide that flexibility, if it means somebody working earlier or working later, if it allows them to be able to be there for their family, I think those are important steps if it's within the means of the position. It's not always the case. Like I said, teenagers are tough. I've got kind of a wide range of personalities. And so I think just like managing employees, each person is different, each kid is different. And so how I parent my 17-year-old son is very different than how I parent my 17-year-old daughter and my 13-year-old daughter. So I think it's just recognizing the differences and their strengths and their weaknesses and just being able to help mold them into the best humans that you can.
Yeah, I think there's definitely both ends of the spectrum. You want to provide employees or some people, with that flexibility. And then the other is like, no, you're just working 24/7. And I'm like, how do you even ask people to do that? And because I don't do that, and I feel like I don't want to do that because I do have a family, I'm like, I need to provide that to other people. And then, are you going to get more work out of somebody if they work a few more hours? Or are you going to get the same amount of work, if not more, if you give them that flexibility? Because now you have better job retention and people like what they're doing and they believe in what they're doing, because, you know, they're led by a CEO such as yourself and you're leading by example, and then you give them that same flexibility. So I'm still learning, you know, to do the balance, but I do feel like providing that environment attracts the right types of employees. And then those employees do go the extra mile when needed, because they know, I guess, when not needed, there is that little bit of flexibility. So anyways, love that insight.
Yeah.
How did you get into, I guess, healthcare and then Face It Together? Mm-hmm. What led up to that? And I'm more, if you could frame it more from like you being fulfilled and doing something mm-hmm. with a purpose mm-hmm. that you believe in, how did you land on what you're doing now?
Yeah. Well, I think definitely to begin with, you know, just being in the healthcare space, it's all about just helping people, help people get well. The previous place that I worked, when I first started, it was much smaller. It grew a ton in the 14 years that I worked there. And there was very much a sense of family even in the organization. And of course, as it grows, there's growing pains and there's, you know, more, you know, different opinions, we were just much larger footprint. So you're not even all in the same physical space. And just as we grew, lost some of that sense of family. And even I worked behind the scenes, I was in the IT department at that facility. And even though I did have a clinical background, my job was to help implement the clinical applications. And even as my time there progressed, like when we started, we were very focused on the patient and very focused on how we could make the patient's experience better, whether that's helping the clinician do their work better, which in turn helps the patient hopefully have a better experience. It was still very patient focused. And as we continue to grow, we lost sight of that a little bit. And that was against kind of who I was and what I believed in as a clinician. I wanted to be part of something that was really helping people get well, helping make that impact. And so it was also creating a strain on my own wellness when I was there. I was in a very challenging work environment. I was working a ton of hours, did not have good work-life integration. It was very much a lot of work and not a lot of family. And as I mentioned, I had 4 kids at that time. They were quite young. And I was working a lot, stressed a lot. I also had gone on kind of a wellness journey. I had gone for my physical and my labs weren't great. I'm like, oh, I gotta like do something about this. So I started to focus on trying to lose weight, trying to exercise more. And then I kept telling myself, oh, I'm not gonna drink for whatever month, plug in the next month, right? I'm not going to drink for November. I'm not going to drink for December. And I do well until I would have a meeting with my then boss that didn't go well. And then I'd go home and drink 2 bottles of wine and start my cycle all over again. Well, now I totally screwed up November. So I guess I'll just wait until December to say I'm not going to drink again, right? So it's just like keep kicking the can down the road. So I went and did that for about a year. And just kept getting worse and worse. And I, you know, my family was suffering. I wasn't my best being the best employee either, just because of how I was handling things. But I had an incident then with my youngest son who, you know, little kids they do a little play and they give tickets out and come watch my performance or whatever. And normally I would have been like, sorry, buddy, let me finish this email. Let me finish this glass of wine. Let me do something else other than go watch this play. But that day, my husband and I both stopped what we were doing and went and watched him sing a little song. It took like 30 seconds. And he talked about it for weeks after that. And I was like, holy crap, I am not doing life right. Like the fact that that little moment had such an impact on him. I'm like, I'm screwing up. I got to do something different. So I quit my job and decided that I needed to find something that did offer better work-life integration, and ended up finding the position with Face It Together. I started as a grant manager, and it's been great on a lot of different levels. Just one, I work with a great team and it's a great mission. And just really, again, I'm behind the scenes. All my positions have been behind the scenes. I've never been like frontline worker with people, but knowing that the work that I do, even though it's, crunching numbers and trying to get the word out, and I'm not actually in the coaching room, but that coaching room experience couldn't happen if I didn't do what I'm doing, right? But then each one of our team meetings, we have one of our coaches share a success story, and hearing those success stories is so impactful and so great. And just the impact by getting one person well from addiction, it impacts their family, impacts their workplace, just continues to impact the people around them. And so it's just that is what fills my cup and keeps me going.
Yeah, and I mean, anytime that you struggle with something personally, you can always relate to somebody else. And I'm not saying you're addicted to alcohol or anything, but anytime you've gone through that, like you're like, I need something to get my mind off this crazy stressful life, and so I can now understand why you'd go to XYZ. So, anyways, I guess that there is a question in here. Looking back, are you grateful that that happened, given your current position? Do you feel like that makes you more relatable, that you had to kind of go through the hell and beat yourself up about it because you're making commitments and then you don't always keep them? How do you look back at that experience now?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's definitely definitely helps me relate, definitely helps me understand what the people we serve are going through. We help individuals no matter where they are in that. It could be somebody that's just contemplating, is the substance, is alcohol, is marijuana, whatever the substance is it impacting my life in an adverse way? We may help them to just cut back. We may just maybe they do want to go fully abstinent. We'll help them with that as well. But really, our goal, I mean, we'll help again anyone, whether you're an executive at an organization or homeless on the street, but really wanting to help those individuals while they're still employed, while they're still married, while they're still connected to their family, being able to be that support system before that is
Yeah.
can, change so dramatically.
I was just talking to this about this with my wife literally last night. How do you define addiction? So I'm like Googling, different definitions, but how do you guys define addiction?
That is an interesting question that I've never been asked, which is great. We have a lot of discussions. Well, I shouldn't say we do have a lot of discussions around the concept of whether addiction is a disease or not, and there's different camps around that. And we believe both things. Like our website is probably more neutral, but certainly recognize the disease concept around addiction. We don't do any diagnosing. We don't do assessments or any of that. So really, we to define addiction, we will work with anybody who feels like the substance is adversely affecting their life. So whether they align with that they have an addiction, or maybe they're a problem drinker, or maybe they just feel like I don't like how this substance is impacting my life. We will work with them. So it's really, I think it's being mindful of the impact that choice is having on you.
I heard it. Yeah, I think that's a great definition. Because it's like, well, most of the world drinks, but what at how many drinks per week are you an addict? And there is no answer to that. And I'd heard the definition of addiction is whatever you're doing, whether it's a substance or behavior, like eating, is it affecting your normal life? Is it preventing you from doing the things that you want to do and need to do, work, family time, things like that. Anyways, I like the, but at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. It's if people want help and if they're, I guess, identifying themselves as I just need a change and I need extra support, to change, where do I go? And that's where you guys step in. And if somebody was in that position, I mean, how do they find out about Face It Together and what's that process like for them to get help?
So the easiest way is through our website, wefaceittogether.org. So we have a contact form on there that an individual can fill out. And then through there, we get our first impressions team would reach out, answer any questions, help talk through the process, and then from there, get them connected with a coach. I would say in terms of how people find out about us. Our biggest referral sources are, you know, friends and family referrals, along with just people looking. We have quite a few Google reviews. So people looking at our Google reviews also, I mean, obviously it's a Google search, but then decide to actually contact us based on what they read in those Google reviews. And so, but yeah, friends and family is our biggest referral source.
And you talked about, it's not just geared towards the person wanting to overcome an addiction. It's also the support system. And just last week, somebody posted, I think on LinkedIn, that her husband had committed or had died by suicide. And the whole post was obviously she's upset, angry, in the grief stage. And she's acknowledging that. She's like, the entire, like, my husband's been on suicide watch off and on and struggled with this. And nobody's ever brought me into the conversation. And she's like, suicide is not about the individual. I mean, of course it is, but it's not just about the individual. There's such a big ripple effect. And anyways, I thought the post was very, very well written. I'm like, I need to be involved in this because it affects me and my family and my decisions. And I just wasn't involved in those conversations on how to support him, on how I should be dealing with myself. So talk to me a little bit more about why you guys focus and what has been the feedback so far.
Yeah, I love that question. And I think that's a really good perspective to hear. And I think it applies in a lot of situations. But we started our loved one program around 2016, really recognizing we had a gap in what we could offer people. And so we'd have loved ones call in, you know, they're desperate, they're focused on the person in their life, the person with addiction. We need to get them help, we need to get them resources. But there's never a lot of talk about that loved one and what they need. And so recognized there was a gap in what was being offered. So we developed our loved one program, which is very unique from the little bit that is out there, where we're really focused on the loved one's wellness. And it's sometimes hard to get loved ones to recognize that. They call in and they're like, well, I'm not the one that needs help. My husband needs help, or my parent needs help, or my child needs help, which, you know, it's like the oxygen mask, right? You can't help others until you help yourself. And so if you don't have the right tools, you're not communicating in a way that is effective and helpful, or setting boundaries in a way that is healthy and helpful, doing different things like that, you know, it's a detriment to that loved one as well as the person with addiction in their life. And so we developed our program really to help with those pieces. It's also to combat the societal stigma. You know, your loved ones are often told, like, you have to let them hit rock bottom, you have to disconnect, you have to disengage, you have to cut off communication with them. And you know, that's easier said than done, and is not the right answer. You know, often people say the opposite of addiction is connection, and so it's figuring out how to connect with that individual in a way that is healthy and helpful. And so that's what our loved one coaching is really focused on, and educating on addiction, because there's a lot of misconceptions out there. There's, you know, that it's a moral failing, and why don't they just choose differently, and all of these things, and that, you know, relapse is part of what often happens. And so helping prepare loved ones for a reoccurrence of symptoms or a relapse. And so anyway, our loved one program is super unique. I am very proud of it. And we often see, we'll work with loved ones even if the person in their life isn't seeking help, whether that help is with us or with someone else. We'll still work with a loved one even if the person is active in their addiction. But while we work with that loved one, oftentimes because they start approaching those conversations differently, they start doing things differently at home, it does often get that person in their life to engage either with us or treatment or whatever is the right path for them.
And so I could kind of see there's two different things you could focus on when you're talking about loved ones of somebody struggling with an addiction. It's how do you support the person who's struggling? And then also, how do you support yourself in this, right? And I think, one, I want to ask kind of which one you're more geared towards, but if you could focus on a little bit more about how do I see myself if my spouse is an addict? You know, what does that say about me? Which I don't think it says anything about you, but I know that that goes through everybody's head, you know, like, oh, what if my child is dealing with an addiction? What does that say about me as a parent? Do you guys focus on that at all?
I think definitely there is always that guilt and the shame that comes with those situations. And so certainly we focus on both of those pieces. It's like getting them the right tools to have the right conversations, but then also talking through that shame and stigma, and talking through what things can they do, what should they own, what shouldn't they own, all of those pieces. Because that is certainly a huge part of it. And just making sure that those loved ones aren't alone. Like, that's a lot of it, because people, there is that shame and stigma. So then nobody wants to talk about it. And nobody wants to say, well, yeah, my spouse, my kid is struggling, because they don't want that judgment. They don't want that shame put on them. And so, giving them someone that has been through that. So all of our coaches have that lived experience. And so they can share, like, yeah, I went through something similar, and this is what I did, or this is what happened. And so helping to talk through things from that perspective.
That a lot again, that focus on, I mean, I grew up in a very religious household growing up, and the message, whether it was taught or how I perceived it, was if you keep the commandments, you will be blessed. And I grew up in a family that my parents were divorced. So I was just going to church with my mom, and it's Latter-day Saints were Mormons. And at 19 years old, you get sent on a 2-year mission and almost no contact with your family. You get a call home twice a week, a year, and it's if you're righteous, your kids go on missions. And some kids went on, and some kids didn't. And I always remember feeling bad for my mom. I'm like, is she putting two to two together? Like, oh, she's not keeping God's commandments enough because her kids are a bunch of wild animals, Like, what is that? What is that message? And really being able to separate that. It's like, no, like, you have your choices, your kids have their choices, or spouses or family or friends, and you can support them, but ultimately they're going to decide what they decide, or they're going to choose whatever they want to at that moment, and the best you can do support. So anyways, that's awesome that you are helping and focusing on that other side, which I think is just, I mean, I don't know anybody who's really doing that. So I think that's really cool.
Awesome. Thank
From a
you.
joy and fulfillment standpoint, because that's what I like to focus on. And I'm like, what do I want out of life? I do think it comes down to joy or happiness. And but not just feeling happy every day, but you also typically want to feel progression and fulfillment. So talk to me about that and what you're doing and how that brings you more joy and fulfillment. Specifically, you said that there was people that share success stories. So if you want to jump into a success story and why that makes you feel cool and amazing, I'd love that as well. But yeah, I'd lo love to hear from you.
So I mean, there's lots of great stories. I think there's a few, I don't know, clips, I suppose, that stand out in my mind. So one of the things that we offer, or that we focus on, is really meeting people where they're at, and being so we offer in-person coaching or by phone or video. And so we have individuals, it allows for greater flexibility, obviously. And we're, post-pandemic, we've been offering this since before the pandemic, but post-pandemic, it's obviously much more accepted. But so we live in a rural community, which with a lot of, there's a lot of farmers in our area. And the fact that we have had farmers that are out in their fields, and they can't get away to come into the office, but we're doing a session with them while they're out on their tractor, which I think is cool and just awesome that technology can enable that to happen. So that's, I think, a cool story just from that term of meeting people where they're at. But then when it comes to kind of that impact on the whole family, there's been stories of, where an individual, they do a night a week where they make a new mocktail, and it's like part of their dinner routine, where before, used to be opening a bottle of wine and having a glass of wine with dinner, but now they make a mocktail, and they can get their kids involved with that. And it just turns into this like new tradition in their family, and like something new that they can focus on. So just being able to do that, and then just hearing the stories of where people, just their growth as they learn new skills, focus in different areas. So our whole programming is, it's not focused on the substance itself, but on really the whole the whole person. And so we do an assessment initially and then every 30 days, and it's looking at their personal, social, and cultural capital. So like, are they connected with their community? How's their housing? How's their employment? Spirituality, different questions like that. And so being able to see those baseline scores and then how we improve those scores over the course of their coaching, and then the stories that come with it. Like one that I remember too is from a housing perspective. So the individual comes in for their coaching session and they're like, oh, everything's great. Everything's great. Well, the coach looks at the assessment and they're like, well, your housing score is way lower than it used to be. And so then he's like, oh, well, yeah, I've been, you know, surfing on my buddy's couches. I just haven't really had a place to stay. So like one, through the assessment, identifying that there was a problem that the individual maybe didn't recognize or didn't want to admit or whatever it might've been. But then being able to then work with that individual to help get them connected to resources in their community to be able to improve that situation. So just different things like that. And just also seeing the pride in the coaches as they share those stories and knowing that they're making that positive impact. It's heavy work, but also very rewarding to be able to make a difference. Again, not just in that person's life, but then the impact for their whole family.
The term coaching, I don't know if I've heard that before in addiction recovery. Is that something unique to you guys? I was going to say, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. So, we do a national certification. So we might hear like, peer recovery support is another term. We call it peer coaching. So all of our coaches have lived experience either as a person with addiction or as a loved one. And some have both, just because it is often a disease that goes through the family. And then you would only coach if you're a person with addiction, you coach people with addiction. If you're a loved one, you coach loved ones. But, and then our coaches, as I mentioned, go through that national certification. So it's really leveraging that power of the peer. So I like to say that we sit kind of between a clinically licensed individual and then what most people think of when they think of recovery is like an AA sponsor, where our coaches, as I mentioned, are certified, they're trained, and then we also have a quality assurance process to make sure that our coaches are appropriately sharing their lived experience, kind of asking the right questions, doing the right things, so keeping them within their swim lane in that journey.
Yeah, I really like the term coach, because as you're telling me the story of this guy, like, hey, it's going great. He didn't even know that, you know, maybe he wasn't acknowledging it or it was going great, but it's like, well, eventually the odds are that's going to catch up. Like, that's not a sustainable lifestyle for most people, you know, couch.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, I've had business coaches that tell me the things that aren't even on my freaking radar. You know? Like, you need to be doing X, Y, Z. I'm like, why? You know, I didn't even recognize that was an issue. So anyways, I kind of just made that connection. I'm like, I really like the term coach rather than, hey, I'm just kidding. You know, I'm going to help you with your addiction, but I'm going to coach you through all these other aspects of your life that do relate to addiction, but also just relate to overall higher life satisfaction. So anyways, that's super cool. On the addiction recovery side.
Yeah. So like you can often hear about individuals that maybe they've eliminated the substance out of their life. They no longer drink, but they're still unhappy and miserable. And so we want to make sure that we're focusing on all of those aspects so that not only is the substance under control, but that they are living their most fulfilled life.
You know, and I'm just your opinion. I don't know if there's data on this, but what causes addiction in the, I'm kind of looking at what do I rely on, you know, when I drink too much or when I go a long time without it or whatever, you know? And for me, it's trying to escape high stress of work or trying to unplug. And I'm just like, I need to freaking shut off my stupid brain because all it's thinking about is all the negative things that can potentially happen that probably won't happen. And I'm just trying to distance myself from that. What has your experience told you that causes addiction?
Yeah. Well, I think everybody's path is a little bit different. Everybody's story is unique. but if you were going to try to come up with some common themes, childhood trauma is a big one that people end up, well, you could say, self-medicating over to get over those childhood traumatic events. Also, a lot of people that have undiagnosed mental health disorders, they will self-medicate as well, especially if, you know, especially if they're undiagnosed and aren't or are not treating whatever that mental health issue is. But then, I mean, that is why we kind of look at all of those aspects. So, I mean, even my story, mine was stress and anxiety and a lot of stress. And that was my way of coping with the stress in my life, which wasn't helpful. You know, it just ends up being a cycle. So you're stressed, you drink, then you're stressed because did I say something inappropriate at that work event or did I do something that I shouldn't have? And so just that, you know, it just continues to be that cycle. Now I'm stressed. Oh, now I'm going to drink again. And so but I think, you know, like I said, each person's path is a little bit different, but I think those are kind of some common themes.
Yeah. You're very geared towards helping others, which is awesome. And I think there's so much satisfaction that comes from that. Off the top of your head, is there anything that you can do that you feel like you can do that would bring you personally, either you or your family, more joy and fulfillment in your life?
That is a great question. So I think for me, and I've started this actually the last few years, doing less about physical gifts, and we instead do experience gifts, which also stretches the, like, I'm granted this is focused on like birthdays or holidays, but being able to have that memory and that experience is so much better than just having a thing. And so at least for my family, that's one of the things that we've really tried to do differently is, and it'll be like each of my kids might get a piece of the weekend we're going to do at wherever it is. And so, you know, this person might have got their favorite restaurant for dinner and we're going to go get tickets to this or whatever. And so that's been what brings, I think, me more joy and hopefully my kids more joy and my husband, but being able to spend more time together versus having more things.
The studies support that because I've read a decent amount of books on, you know, how to really increase happiness levels. And that is definitely one of the things is experience versus a physical object. And another one that just came to my mind, it was a study that, I don't know, let's call it $20. Give a random stranger $20 and you say you can go spend it on yourself or you can go spend it on somebody, a stranger. And then they followed up and the people who spent it on a stranger, they didn't get to spend anything on themselves. They reported much greater levels of happiness. And you're like, okay, so let's gear towards more, you know, helping others while at the same time, experiences. Anyways, I like that a lot. That's something that I definitely strive to do. And I'm always like, we do daddy daughter dates every day. And then you kind of run out of things and it's like, oh, let's walk over to the store and buy a Kinder egg. And I'm like, no, we're not buying anything. Let's go do something. Let's go. There's cows down the road and we'll ride there and we'll go buy carrots and go feed the cows. And those things, it just, rather than just filling them up with junk or buying them another toy that they'll, you know, forget about in a week. Right. So anyways, I think you hit that right on the head. Last question for you as we wrap up. What is the legacy that you want to leave behind? How does Wendy White want to be remembered by?
I think from a professional level, the legacy that I would want to leave behind would be the culture that I've created in an organization, whether that's Face It Together or wherever life may lead, or where I've been in the past. But I want people to have experienced a workplace culture that is supportive and that they are proud to be a part of. And I hope that the conversations and the interactions that I have with those individuals help them to take the next step on their journey to being the best person that they can be. And so I think it's just believing in the people that I work with and hoping that they become their best. And I think that applies personally as well. And again, four kids, you know, they're very independent and I'm proud of that independence. And so I can't wait to see where life will take them. And so hopefully I've given them the right tools and that pretty soon they'll have to figure it out on their own. So.
Yes. I like that a lot. There's such a big impact. I mean, you're helping all these people recover from addiction. And there's a huge impact on that. But kind of relooking at it, it's like you actually have the opportunity to make a much bigger impact on your employees. How many hours of awake are we, you know, throughout the week? And how many of those are we working? You know, it's a third of our lives. And that's such an amazing, I guess, mission or legacy to leave behind of like, look at all these people that it's not just helping them overcome something over for a few months, but it's like, this is their career. And I made their career a better, more safe, accepting place for them to thrive. So yeah, I love that.
Absolutely. Speech. Thanks.
So Wendy, I appreciate you being on the show. Where can our listeners connect with you and learn more about both you and your company?
Yeah, thank you. So like I mentioned, our website's the best way to connect with us. So it's wefaceittogether.org. You could also call us at 855-539-9375. And either one will work. But yeah, if you are struggling or you know someone who's struggling, we're here to help.
Hey, Wendy, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.